possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by Euromart International Food Store on Springfield and Locust in Champaign, offering 200 kinds of cheeses, 25 kinds of olives, and 100 kinds of olive oil. The Euromart hosts a cheese and olive tasting from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. We are in the midst of our spring fun drive. And we just heard a couple of underwriting announcements. Well, listeners are also critical to keeping us on the air here on AM 580. You've counted on us to keep our service to you, and now we're counting on you to help us continue to provide this service by providing financial support for your public radio station. The number to call with a pledge of financial support is 217-244-9455. We are live and local here on AM 580 in a time when there are fewer and fewer locally owned radio stations and diminishing live broadcasting. Listener support is critical. Half our budget comes from support from listeners. Tom Rogers is in Pledge Central this afternoon with me. Tom is, of course, our news director here at AM 580. Hi, Tom.
Good afternoon, Celeste.
Tell us about that goal we've got for us today.
Well, we're doing really, really well. I mean, let me put it that way to begin with. We've been slightly ahead of our goal for each of the 3 days before. We would like to reach the $65,000 mark by the end of the day today. We're at about $60,000 and change, about $60,399 as of a little before noon, and we would love to keep the momentum going toward that $65,000 goal. But it starts with you, individual listeners who form the basis of our support here at AM 580. Give us that pledge of support at 217-244-9455 right now. And not only can you get the good feeling of being a participant, an active participant in live local radio, but we'll give you a couple of goodies thrown in, too.
Yeah. We're suggesting,
May we suggest
a pledge of $75 or more this afternoon. If you call in this afternoon with a pledge of $75 or more, we'll send you a cookbook by Beth Hensberger. She will be our guest in this next portion of the Afternoon Magazine. We have three books for you to choose from, and they are beautiful, lovely books. Beth is an award-winning food writer and cookbook author. Here are the books that we have for you to choose from. Number one, Best Quick Breads Cookbook. Number two, Bread Lover's Machine Cookbook. And The Ultimate Rice Cooker Cookbook, number three. That's with a pledge of $75 or more this afternoon. Also with that pledge of $75, we'll send you a member card, which allows you to dine in the area and out across the country. In many instances, 2-for-1 dining experiences with that member card. 217-244-9455, the number to call. That's 244-9455. WILL. We accept Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. And with that pledge of $75 or more, we'll send you a cookbook by Beth Hensberger. Just let the volunteer answering the phone know which book you'd like. The Quick Breads Cookbook, the Bread Machine Cookbook, or the Rice Cooker Cookbook. 217-244-9455. Be the next person to call. Volunteers are ready to take your call this afternoon. 244-WILL. Thanks. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. On the program today, we're going to talk about bread and rice. More specifically, we'll talk about bread, rice, the bread machine, and the rice cooker. Did you realize that you can make chili and soup in the rice cooker? You can also do risotto, polenta, porridge, and pudding in a rice cooker. I had no idea. Our guest this afternoon is Beth Hensberger. She's a food writer and cookbook author, and she loves to cook. She's the recipient of a James Beard Award and was twice nominated for Julia Child Awards. She's the author of many cookbooks, including The Best Quick Breads, The Bread Lover's Bread Machine Cookbook, and with Julie Kaufman, The Ultimate Rice Cooker Cookbook. Listeners, I invite you to join the discussion this afternoon. Give us a telephone call. I look forward to your questions and comments. You can join us with the telephone call, and here are the numbers. The number is 333-9455. That's the number in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Beth was a guest on this program a little more than a year ago. She's a great guest. She really knows her stuff, and I'm very pleased to welcome her back to the Afternoon Magazine. And again, listeners, I invite you to join the discussion. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Beth, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's great to be back, Celeste. How are you?
I'm fine. And you?
Good.
Good. Great. You know, I wonder if you were eager to work with the bread machine and the rice cooker, or if you were slow to warm to them.
Slow to warm to both of them.
Really?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I didn't use machines. Everything that I did was by hand or with electric mixer. The bread machine came first. Bruchov, Harvard Common Press, loved the piece of equipment and asked me to do a book. And it was the first book that I did with that company, which is a great company. And I thought, oh my goodness, I've been telling everybody, you know, you have to touch it, you have to use your hands, you know, you have to use all your senses to know, you know, how to, you know, have a full experience of making the bread. Well, I proved myself wrong.
Yeah.
I found that the machines are just nothing short of remarkable, and what came out was absolutely blew my mind, and I got addicted to the machine. I mean, testing was probably the most fun of any book I ever worked on, and sometimes I'd test 3, 4, 5 recipes a day because it was just so much fun.
Yeah.
All you have to do is load the machine, because once you have good recipe, doesn't matter. And you just load the machine, and you press the buttons, and that's it. And out it comes.
Yep, yep. Well, you are a convert. You're also a convert to the rice cooker, it seems.
Yes. My editor at the San Jose Mercury News, where I'm a columnist, her husband brought her back a rice cooker from the Tokyo airport, a digital model. And she was saying that there were no recipes. There was a little recipe booklet with the machine, but it was all in Japanese, and the recipes were really not to the American palate. And she says, do you have anything on this? And I said, gee, really, I don't. I have never really used one, only the rice cooker as a steamer. And there we had our concept was born, and we really ended up loving this piece of machine. I use my rice cooker every single day.
Well,
and I never made rice every single day before.
Yeah,
it's now just part of my life.
Now, when did you realize it could be so versatile?
Into the testing.
Yeah.
Into the testing. But it is completely, you know, especially for just plain rice,
mm-hmm.
you know, which most of us eat. Most everybody eats plain rice. While you can make lots of composed dishes and put all sorts of other ingredients in, I just buy all different types of rices. And I pick one in the morning, and then I load up the machine. And I have a digital, which I absolutely, anybody who loves a rice cooker, go for the digital. They're so sophisticated. And, of course, they're the ones to get if you want the brown rices, because the original machines were all developed for use of the Japanese rices, you know, and the white rices. And I just load it up, and push the button, and then it when it's done cooking, it goes on to the keep warm, and then whenever I walk in, when I'm finished working on the computer, there's part of my lunch.
Yeah. Now, a couple questions here. What should we know about how a rice cooker works, and what should we know about the various types of cookers?
Okay. As far as the way that the rice cooker works, it is different than stovetop because stovetop has bottom heat. A rice cooker has circular heat around the sides, so it doesn't ever burn. And it is just so it can sit for long periods mm-hmm. of time without you doing it. So that's generally the principle of how it works. There are two basic types. One is what's called the on-off machine, and there's just a button that you push down, and it's on. And then when it's off, it clicks off. Or if it's a very simple model, you have to turn it off. You'll have to set a timer. So it's not completely automatic. Now, some of the on-off ones also will switch to keep warm. You know, there's different levels depending on how much you pay for the machine, for the technology that's in it. The digital has just all sorts. They have porridge cycles, white rice, brown rice, and you can do a whole lot more in them.
Yeah.
And they're just because they're more sensitive, you know, and they have their little digital timer and that set off a satellite. It's really quite amazing. It's just wonderful to really be able to cook good food and have to put a minimal amount of time and effort and not have to watch it, because if you do anything in the oven or stovetop, you have to stay aware of mm-hmm. whatever that's cooking. Mm-hmm. And if you're working at home or, you know, you want to go take a nap, anything like that, then, boy, it's really nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometime back I said to Harriet Williamson, our producer, do I really need a rice cooker? You know, I get very nice results on the stove.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, they are wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I was the same way as you. I just went, I've made my rice like this forever. I don't need another appliance, you know, to do something I already do so well. But I found that I never make rice on the stovetop anymore. I always use the rice cooker now.
In recent years, we've seen many, many rices or a greater variety of rice in the marketplace. For example, it's common in the grocery store now to find basmati, jasmine, arborio, and sometimes you can find in your grocery store red and black rices.
Yes.
Would you say something about the varieties of rice on the market?
Well, you know, American economy, as far as food, we are super, super lucky because we are a wealthy enough country to have the choice. Now, the reason that we have the different rices is because we have, far beyond the original melting pot, we have a lot of different types of cultures now living in America, and everybody wants their comfort food, and rice is considered a comfort food. It's considered a basic food. Pretty much everywhere else in the world except America, rice is, you know, a complete staple, a daily staple.
Mm-hmm.
So you will have, you know, basmati, which was, you know, once only eaten in even in India by royalty, or for a funeral or for a wedding. You know, my friends from India said, I didn't grow up eating basmati rice. They grew up eating converted rice, which was invented in India, matter of fact, thousands of years ago to preserve the rice. That would be like Uncle Ben's.
Mm-hmm.
And then the basmati, which was expensive, would be saved for special occasions. Now, basmati rice you can find just about anywhere. Everybody pretty much knows what basmati rice is. You used to only be able to get Chinese-style long grain rice, which is called fan, in Chinese restaurants. Now you can go to an Asian store and get long grain rice and make Chinese rice at home. And it comes out perfectly in the rice cooker, by the way. And then, of course, we have the short grain rices that are a little more sticky. And those are like Japan. Now, California grows a lot of domestic Japanese-style rices because we always had a very large population of Japanese immigrants. Matter of fact, my girlfriend was telling me that whenever she visits Japan, she always fills her suitcase with American short-grain rice because it's an excellent gift because it's very hard to get in Japan, and it's such high quality, which is interesting.
Yeah, you mentioned in the book, the Ultimate Rice Cooker Cookbook, that rice in Japan can be very expensive, too.
Very, very expensive, and it's because, you know, they don't have very much land and whatnot. So let's see what else we have. Oh, jasmine rice, and that's from Southeast Asia. That's where that is pretty much grown, and down in Texas and parts of Northern California. They're growing domestic jasmine rices. I've just started eating on a regular basis long grain brown jasmine, which has got imported from Thailand, which is now becoming quite inexpensive. It's one of the most delicious rices. It's really as good as the basmati as for how different of rice.
Yeah.
Completely different fragrance. And, you know, something like the jasmine or basmati, your kitchen fills with this wonderful, elusive aroma perfume while you're cooking it, too. So you have sort of another level. The red rice comes from Bhutan. That's, you know, up by Nepal. Red rice, there's a red rice called Riz Rouge, and that comes from southern France. And that was also an exceedingly rare rice to find. My girlfriend in Paris, I said, you know, do you eat red rice? And she says, no. Matter of fact, Uncle Ben's, again, was the top choice of rice in France, which really surprised me. I expected something different.
Yeah.
And the Riz Rouge now is showing up in, you know, the 2, 3, and 4-star restaurants, you know, as a artisan product from the Cameroon area.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we've got a listener who's waiting for us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what we should do is go and talk with this caller.
Absolutely. Let's go.
In Belgium on the toll-free line, line 4. Hi.
Hello. In your discussion with rice here, I have a question. Why don't we ever hear of rice bread? We make it out of wheat and corn and rye and everything else. You never hear of rice bread.
Okay. If you go to a natural food store, you will find rice breads. Hmm. Now, rice is not usually used for bread making because it contains no gluten like wheat and rye.
Oh.
So if you made a bread just of rice flour, it would all fall apart.
I see.
But you can make a wheat bread and add cooked rice to it, which I do quite often, and it's really, really delicious. Or use portions of white or brown rice flour. And if you look on some of your mixed grain breads, both in the grocery store and in the health food store, you will see rice flour is usually one of the ingredients because it's very flavorful.
But you can't make it just out of rice because of your reason. Huh?
Now, rice flour is very important in wheat-free diets, but they put some kind of filler or stabilizer. It'll usually be in combination with potato flour, and then they'll have some filler that will give it some body. But usually in the frozen food section, you can find rice bread for people that are really, really gluten sensitive and allergic to wheat, and so then they can still have the texture. Because if you can't eat wheat and you can't eat bread, you really end up missing that texture that comes from the yeast. You don't realize that we've become so sensitive to that. That's normal in bread.
Thank you very much.
Very welcome.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. I know, Beth, that you've made breads without gluten. And there are a number of them included in the bread machine.
Yes,
cookbook.
We did it. I went to Red Star Kitchens and really walked around and really tried to find super, super successful breads that were wheat-free because they are so difficult. And that's one of the reasons people turn to bread machines is that they go on to some sort of special diet. They can't have dairy anymore, so they can't have the milk in the bread, or they can't have sugar anymore. They have to be careful of the salt. And the bread machine is the perfect way to continue to make bread and then, you know, make adjustments
One of the things that you're often requested to make for a catered event is a salad, a rice salad, a wild rice salad with cranberries and berry vinaigrette. And this is included in the Rice Cooker Cookbook. And this sounds very good.
It's wonderful.
And in the introduction to the recipe, it's noted that prepared rice, is this correct, can be frozen?
Yes.
What a great idea. Tell us about that.
Well, you just cool it completely. Just open the lid or take the lid off the pot that you're cooking. I always fluff the rice, especially something like wild rice. You want to cook until it's tender and the kernels start to curl back on the top. If you go too far, it'll get mushy. If you still have some liquid, you just drain it off, let it cool completely. If you were doing this in a restaurant, they would take it out of the pot and put it on like a sheet pan so that it wouldn't get soggy at the bottom. But usually if you have only a small amount, that's not usually a problem. And then wait till it's completely cool and put it into freezer bags, and in it goes. And I do this quite often, especially if wild rice is especially good to freeze. And, of course, it's an expensive rice.
Right.
And so I never want to waste any. So freezing it is a very convenient way to do that. Yeah, the back of the Rice Cooker book has a whole section on our favorite salads, which is sort of a little extra goodie we threw in there.
Yeah, that's really nice because for years I was making the Silver Palette wild nutted rice recipe.
Uh-huh.
And here, you know, and I've thought to myself, well, how could I change this? How could I do more things mm-hmm. with rice salads? And here there's a number of them. Whether or not you've got a rice cooker, you can go to town here.
Mm-hmm.
So that just sounds good, cranberries and berry vinaigrette. Now, the rice that you freeze and then would use at a later date, do you just use it frozen?
No, what I do is I defrost it. And you can either defrost it in the refrigerator for a day,
mm-hmm.
Or you can just throw it out on the counter and mm-hmm. let it defrost, which you'll do in a couple of hours, no problem. And then toss all your ingredients together. And then you can re-refrigerate. The made salad. What's nice about rice salads with vinaigrette, as long as you don't have any perishable ingredients,
mm-hmm.
you can leave it out at room temperature, which is makes it really nice for picnics and things like that. Because I don't like to do mayonnaise salads, you know, that are going to
in hot weather. Yeah.
But the vinaigrette salads work so nicely.
Yeah. Well, whether it's rice, couscous, or quinoa, maybe you would share with us some of your favorite ways of jazzing up grains.
Well, couscous, I really, really like. This was a grain that really, you know, unless you went to a Moroccan restaurant, you know, on your birthday or something, you just weren't going to find normally in people's homes cooking. And, oh, a few years ago, the Old Ways Preservation Society took this huge group of food professionals to Morocco on a food culinary tour. Well, for years we have been having article upon article upon article on Moroccan and North African cooking by all sorts of food professionals, not just the people that specialized in the cuisine of that area. And one of the wonderful bylines of that is that lots of couscous. And couscous is like pasta. It's made from semolina flour, and it's like a pasta dough, and then it's pushed through sieves, wire sieves, and it can be very coarse, or it can be pushed through a number of sieves and be made very fine. And then it's dried. So it's a very, very convenient kind of food, say if you're out in the desert, mm-hmm. or, you know, mm-hmm. you don't have much fuel. So all you do is pour boiling water over it, and it reconstitutes in a very short period of time, and you're ready to go. So one of the favorite things that I like to do is just throw in a can of chickpeas and maybe some red onion, a little mm-hmm. diced red onion or green onion. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I also make tabbouleh with couscous, not just the cracked wheat. Make it with the semolina. And this is extremely popular salad, surprisingly enough, tabbouleh. In France, they serve it to the school children. And you can add apples and mint and all sorts of stuff. And then, you know, there you go. You just pour the boiling water over, and there it is. It's ready to go.
Sounds great.
Yeah. We cook it a little longer in the rice cooker, and it makes a little bit more of a tender product. There's also what's called Israeli couscous that looks like oversized pearls of tapioca,
mm-hmm.
and that's really delicious. Very, very good.
Let's talk with another caller. Listener in Lafayette, again on the toll-free line. Good afternoon.
I have a question. I've used a bread maker for quite a few years, and it's based on time and temperature. There's no level sensor to detect the end of a rising period. And as a result, you have to do quite a bit of fine-tuning on the amount of yeast you put in order to make it work well. I was wondering, when you're going through many recipes, is this a type of machine you would use, or is there something more sophisticated?
What kind of machine do you have?
The well-built.
The well-built was a little bit rougher of a machine. That's why you have to do that little extra tweaking. The new machines are quite sophisticated. Really, in just the last 3 to 4 years, they've just gone a whole big jump in the technology, so you have a lot more sensitivity. I have a National, a Breadman, the one that they sell at Williams-Sonoma, and I love that machine, and I've never had to make any adjustments. The rising periods and everything are all timed, and it was all perfect, so I never had to do anything, and I literally made, with 350 recipes in the book, I had to make at least three times that many recipes in the testing, and I had virtually no problems whatsoever. But the well-built is really known for having to kind of keep an eye and tweaking, and, now I'm sure you're very used to using your machine now at this point.
Well, for a fixed recipe, it's okay,
uh-huh.
but when you start varying the recipe, you do have to do that tweaking.
Okay, now, varying a recipe, you start doing work like I do, and you are an innovator, and yes, you're going to have to, it's like mathematics. You have to know all the variables, all the proportioning, and yes, you have to play with it. But that's the fun part.
Yeah, it's the lack of a level sensor to indicate when it's finished rising that makes that tweaking more difficult. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if you were working with something that, had overcome that problem or not.
My National has a timed rising cycle.
Yeah.
And there's charts with all of the different cycles that are within the machine and the varying times of that rising, so I never had to deal with any of that.
Okay, well, it's the same basic problem, it's just you have more variability that you can program into it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, that answers my question.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Beth Hensberger. She's the author of many cookbooks, including The Best Quick Breads, The Bread Lover's Bread Machine Cookbook, and with Julie Kaufman, The Ultimate Rice Cooker Cookbook. Listeners, you can join the discussion this afternoon with Beth Hensberger with the telephone call. Join us on the line, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. If somebody was going to go out and be in the market today for either one of these machines, Beth, what would you suggest where would you suggest they start looking? What's the what's the best advice? What's the
for
best
both
machine?
Bread machine,
yeah.
And rice cooker?
Uh-huh.
Either a large department store,
mm-hmm.
or one of my favorite haunts is Williams-Sonoma.
Yeah.
Because you can always get them there. They're going to, some place like Williams-Sonoma is going to have the high end if you want the best machine. The other reason I say Williams-Sonoma is they have lifetime guarantee on both machines. And I want to tell you, a couple years in, if something goes wrong or if one of the cycles isn't working properly, you just pop that thing right in your car and you drive on over, and there's no question asked, and you walk out with a new machine. And I'll tell you, it's worth it. It's worth it to have that in today's society where everything's so expensive. And, you know, it's like getting this special gift, you know, to know that somebody cares. Now, most department stores will also carry, I notice, hardware stores. The rice cookers are all available in ethnic groceries, your Asian groceries. Now, you wouldn't be able to find a bread machine in there, but the rice cooker would be in the Asian groceries.
Okay. One of the things that you can do in a bread machine, if it has this particular cycle, is quick breads. And that machine, there are machines out there that have a quick bread cake cycle.
Yes.
Now, I think myself, I think that if I was going to invest in a machine, I think I would go for that one.
It was a surprising feature that I thought, I don't want to mess with it. You know, obviously the oven's going to work better. And first of all, the shape of the pan is rectangular. It's a little bit more squat rectangular. So you're going to get a quick bread loaf that's very similar looking than that you would normally make. But the cycle is only about an hour, sometimes 75 minutes, because it runs a little bit lower temperature than in the oven because it is an enclosed, totally enclosed environment. I was very, very surprised and delighted with the kind of recipes that came out of there, how good they came out. And you have to make the toasted coconut bread.
Yeah.
I mean, it was remarkable. Matter of fact, I was taking sections of it over to my favorite Mexican restaurant where I know all the chefs and everything, and they had that on the grill, and that was a couple of years ago, and they're still asking me for more coconut bread.
Oh, wow.
They said it was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
One of the recipes that I thought was pretty interesting, and this I had always thought was a yeast bread, was Anadama bread.
Anadama bread can be either a quick bread or a yeast bread. There's two versions. The quick version is so tasty. It's something you could whip up for dinner to have with soups, or if you had a lunch with a salad and you wanted to, you know, have that. That's what's so nice about the quick bread cycles, you know, is that they really are quick. You do want to have a little time to let them cool, as usual, just like they would be out of the oven traditionally. I pull them out of the machine right when the beep goes off. I don't let them sit because otherwise they'll collect some moisture. And then I take them out of the pan and then let them cool a little bit.
Yeah. Now, the bread recipes in the bread machine cookbook, can you use those for breads you make in the oven?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you have to do any tweaking?
Yep.
Okay.
And there is a section in the book that tells you how to adapt recipes from traditional. Traditional recipes for the oven that usually use 6 cups of flour, 6 or 7 cups of flour, you just cut that in half to 3, 3.5 cups of flour, and you will have a 1.5 pound loaf.
Okay.
Now, this is a pretty general, you know, overlay. Also, the other thing, I always use wheat gluten. You'll always see 2 to 4 teaspoons of wheat gluten in all of my recipes. That helps set the structure in that particular type of environment, that type of heat, because it's not a dry heat, it's an enclosed heat, and it's a little bit more moist, so that your loaf does not collapse in the center a little bit.
Okay, and then just to be clear now, can you work in the other direction? If there's a recipe that I really like in the bread machine cookbook and I wanted to make it, let's say I was somewhere without the bread machine or whatever, could I do that?
Oh, absolutely, with no tweaking.
Yeah, with no tweaking. How about that?
Yeah. You could even leave out the gluten, although I now put gluten in just about everything. Now, one of the big uses of the bread machine, and some people buy the bread machine just to do this, is pizza dough. So you have the dough mixed and risen in the machine, and then you shape it by hand and then bake it in a regular oven. I have a whole chapter on these types of breads, focaccia, deep dish pizza, Chinese naan, lavash. I mean, and it's so nice because a lot of these doughs are a little more wet, and they would be difficult to work with your hands.
Mm.
And the machine, oh, my goodness. And then I did my last chapter that I worked on when I was doing all the testing was on the French and Italian country breads. And those were mixed in the machine and then shaped by hand and then done into all these fabulous, wonderful shapes in the oven. And it absolutely was just a remarkable experience. I got so excited, I couldn't believe it. And there is a recipe for a biga, B-I-G-A, which is a starter that's not soupy, not liquidy, but kind of like a dough that you make and you can keep in the refrigerator for 2 weeks. I want to tell you, it's worth the price of the book to go out and learn how to make this starter and then all the different breads you can make with it. And this is another case where the doughs, if you were making them in an electric mixer or by hand, they would be very time-consuming and very difficult because they were so sticky. Because the stickier you get these doughs for these country breads, when they bake off, that moisture evaporates and you get these tender insides and really, really, really crisp crusts. And it's so much fun. The bread machine really, really works for these kinds of breads.
What do you think of the bread machine mixes that are on the market?
I went into that also in the book, and I even have some recipes that are the mixes, embellished a little bit. Sure, if that's where your palate is at, no problem. I find that people like to start out with a mix because they're like a little bit insecure.
Mm-hmm.
How does this machine work? Is it really going to do it? Can I really go away? You know, when I was first making the breads and doing the testing, I kept opening the lid and touching it. Was this really going to work? And then you have to go through that because, you know, you're like a scientist alone in your kitchen. And, you know, nobody's really there. And you have to go by, you know, your sight and your feeling and the smell and make your deductions. Just like the man that called and said, you know, well, I have to tweak, you know, the rising and this and that, because every person is different with their expectations and what they need. But really, the bread machine, once you get comfortable with it, is just so efficient, especially if you really like homemade bread.
Mm.
And a lot of people have bread machines and also make bread in the electric mixer as well. They use it as an alternative.
Yeah. Well, homemade bread, I mean, it makes opening that brown paper bag at lunchtime something to really look forward to.
Yeah. You know, we're pretty spoiled now because on both coasts and I think also in the Chicago area, we have really good bakeries, you know, with this artisan movement.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people say, well, why should I make bread at home and go to the trouble when I can go out and buy such good bread? Well, yes, that is very realistic. But if you love making bread, if you love that as a craft, because a lot of people that make bread do it because they like the craft, they like the process. And if you like that, there's nothing that's going to be as easy or as satisfying or as simple to do in your own home with a minimal amount of equipment.
Mm.
And it just tastes so good. It's really, and it's fun.
Right. Right. It's very comforting and it smells fabulous.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so on and so forth. Let's talk with another listener. Our last caller this afternoon, listener in Loda on line 4. Hi.
Hello. Great show. I'm enjoying it so much.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yes. I just wanted to say that I've been using a bread machine, and I would like to share that those people that may get a new one, don't ever forget to put the little butterfly in the
Oh, yes, yes, the blade.
Yes, sometimes
the blade looks like a little butterfly, and when you put that pan in, you pop the pan in and it snaps in place, and you have to remember to snap it in place, too, because one time I didn't, and it was mixing and the pan was jerking around, and then you put that little butterfly on the shaft and make sure that's clicked in place. That's your kneading, mixing and kneading blade.
Yes, and now after saying that, I would like if you spell your name slowly so that I can get the name. I'm very interested in the book about rice.
You know, probably you could hold on the line and someone in the back would probably do that, but my last name is Hensperger. H-E-N-S-P-E-R-G-E-R.
Okay, and the
and
title?
Either online, Amazon.com, or you can go into your bookstore, and I've done like, you know, 14 or 15 books, so something will pop up.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. The title of the book, The Rice Cooker Cookbook, is The Ultimate Rice Cooker Cookbook.
One thing I want to tell you, very interesting, the Rice Federation has been referring a lot of people to me, and they had made the comment that this was the best book on rice that's in print.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, again, there are so many wonderful recipes in there. And for those of us who like rice and all kinds of grains, I mean, there are recipes in there for oatmeal and, as we mentioned, couscous and quinoa, which I think is a fabulous grain.
Yes.
Quinoa tabbouleh is can't be beat in my book.
Oh, I know. It's wonderful. Quinoa is one of those grains that a lot of people do not get exposed to until you have, say, an allergy. And then you have to start rotating your grains.
Mm-hmm.
And then quinoa pops up because it is so mild flavored. And it's relatively inexpensive and it cooks very nicely. And you can eat it plain as a side dish like rice or make it into a salad or another composed dish. I think that we'll see a lot more recipes with quinoa in the next decade and two decades because it's an ancient grain, but as it becomes more available, more cooks. It's very well known in health food circles.
Yeah, because it's a nutritional powerhouse.
Oh, it's just unbelievable, yeah.
Yeah. We got to wrap it up, Beth. Thank you so much for talking with us.
The time goes by so fast. We have such a good time.
Yeah, take care. Well, let's do it again in the future.
Good.
Okay, take care.
Okay, goodbye to everyone.
Beth Hensperger has been our guest this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. She's the author of many cookbooks, including The Best Quick Breads, The Bread Lover's Bread Machine Cookbook, and with Julie Kaufman, The Ultimate Rice Cooker Cookbook. And listeners, this afternoon, if you join us this afternoon, if you give us a call this afternoon and make a pledge of financial support of $75 or more, we'll send you one of these cookbooks by Beth Hensperger. We have The Best Quick Breads Cookbook, The Bread Lover's Machine Cookbook, and The Ultimate Rice Cooker Cookbook. That's with a pledge of $75 to 217-244-9455, 244-WILL. All these books published by the Harvard Common Press, and they have provided some of these books for us this afternoon to offer to you, to encourage you to join us with a pledge of financial support. Let's go very quickly to Pledge Central. Tom Rogers, our news director, is there this afternoon with us.
Yes.
And bring us up to date on where we stand and where we hope to go.
Well, I'll tell you what, we would love to reach the $65,000 mark by the end of the day, but it's a little quiet in here. We would like to hear a few more calls come in to 244-9455. We've had a few during the Afternoon Magazine. We'd like to thank Lisa Trimble of Urbana, Douglas Elric of Champaign for giving us a call and pledging their support this afternoon. We would like to hear from you, too. This is where you come in. Your public radio station needs your help. So give us a call at 217-244-9455 and help us reach that goal. Help us keep the momentum of reaching $65,000 in pledges by the end of the day today.
And all you need to do when you call in is let the volunteer know which one of these cookbooks you'd like to have. The Best Quick Breads Cookbook, The Bread Lover's Machine Cookbook, or The Ultimate Rice Cooker cookbook. That's with a pledge of $75 or more, which is 21 cents a day. And not only will you get the cookbook, but of course you'll get our patterns, which is our program guide, and also at that $75 level, the member card, 2-for-1 dining here in the area and out across the country. That's 217-244-9455. 244-WILL. Volunteers are ready to take your call. Be the next to call. 217-244-WILL. And thanks to everyone who has joined us, has joined the Friends of WILL. Thank you to our new members and to our current members. It's 1:51, and settlement prices are in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Dave Dickey.
Todd Gleason.
You're back.
I'm back from vacation. I spent some time in Missouri and Arkansas with a few friends of mine, riding some very curvy roads on my motorcycles. We all survived and came back, and that's a very good thing. You know, it's a good thing that we're in the middle of pledge drive too. I planned this vacation, Celeste, just a little bit too early. I didn't realize it was pledge drive time. So my apologies for being away, but I understand that we're well on our way to reaching our goal, and certainly the ag listeners could jump in and
they can take advantage. Of this cookbook offer.
They could take advantage of the cookbook offer, and there are some other offers that you'll hear about a little bit later from AgriGold and the analysts that are on the air here, too. So the number to call, Celeste, is 217-244-9455. It would certainly be appreciated. Let's take a look now at the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade and how things finished for the day. The bean futures were down about 16 cents. We'll get to those numbers momentarily. In the wheat pit today, May futures had a high of 398.5, a low at 389. They settled 397. They were up 3 on the day. July futures 408, the high, the low at 397.5, and a settlement price at 406, up 3.75. September futures in the wheat pit 412, the high, the low at 403.25, settlement price at 411.5, up 5.25, and December wheat 420.5, the high, the low at 411.5, a settlement price at 420, up 4. March futures 424.5, the high, the low at 415, a settlement for the March wheat at 424.5. They finished the day 3.5 higher. Corn futures were down for the day, 310.75, the high, the low at 307.75 in that May contract. The nearby May settling, 309.25, down 2 for the day. July futures, 317, the high, low at 313.75, the settlement price at 315, down 2.75. And the September corn, 313, the high, the low at 309.5, a settlement price 311, down 2.5 cents. December contract now, 310, the high, the low at 306.25. Your new crop, December, settled 307.5. And they were down 2.75 on the day. March futures, 312.75, the high, the low at 309.75, settled 311, down 2 cents. In the May futures, 314.75, the high, the low at 311.75, settled 312.5, 2.5 lower. In the May corn, 314.75 high, low at 311.75, settled 312.5, down 2.5 cents. July contract, 314.75, the high, the low at 311.75, it too settled at 312.5, down 2.5 cents. And the December 05 corn, 277.5, the high, the low at 276. 2 years out, the settlement price for the Deese corn, 276.5, down a penny and a half. May oats now, 164.5, the high, low at 160, settlement price at 163.25. They were up a quarter. In July oat futures, 170.5, the high, the low at 166, settlement price there at 169.75. They were up 1.25 for the day. From the soy complex, beans finished 16.25 in the nearby May contract, lower 973, the high, the low at 951, settled 952.75. Down 16.25 cents. July futures, 968, the high, the low at 947, a settlement price at 949. They were down 16.5 as well. In the August soybeans, 909, the high, the low at 891, settled 893. Down 15.5. September now, close enough to the new crop that they traded just a bit differently today, down 4.75 only, 801 the high, the low at 787, settled 789.5 once again. That September was down 4.75. We'll talk to Wayne Nelson at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock this afternoon about the difference between the old and the new crop corn, or an old and new crop soybeans, and why the prices varied so much. Soybeans 744 the high, the low at 731, settled 734.75, down a half cent. In the January beans, 745 the high, the low at 733, settled 734, down 3 cents. The March futures in the bean pit, 736 the high, the low at 726. That 10-cent range settled 4 cents or 5 cents, 3 cents above the bottom of that at 729 in the March down a penny for the day. May bean meal at 304 high, low at 296.80. Settlement price at 297.30, down 670. July meal 302.50, the high, the low at 295.50. Settled there 295.70. They were down 660. The May bean oil 32.78, the high, the low at 32.25. Settled 32.28, down 9. And July bean oil 32.60 on the high for the day, the low at 31.90. The settlement price for the July bean oil 31.98. And they were down 24. Now here's Celeste Gwynn with today's Mercantile Exchange settlement prices. Celeste?
Thank you, Todd. Feeder cattle, live cattle higher today. Lean hogs were mixed. May pork bellies finished higher. April feeder cattle, 94.75, the high 93.90, the low 94.32.5, the settlement dead up 50. May, 93.20, the high 91.70, the low 92.72.5, the settlement dead up 130. August feeder cattle, 94.25, the high 92.80, the low 94.22.5, the settlement that up 190. April live cattle, 83.25, the high 82.12.5, the low, the settlement 83.17.5, that up 97.5. June, 78.15, the high 76.35, the low 77.92.5, the settlement that up 170. August, 79.40, the high, 78.15, the low. August live cattle finishing today at 79.12.5, up 105. October live cattle, 87.17.5, the high, 79.45, the low. 80.02.5, the settlement, that up 50. May lean hogs, 69.95, the high, 68.40, the low, 68.65, the settlement, that down 25. June lean hogs, 72.25, the high, 70.45, the low, 70.60, the settlement, that down 7.5. July lean hogs finished higher today, the high, 71.10, the low, 69.60, the settlement, 70.10, up 30. August lean hog, 69.30, the high, 67.85, the low, the settlement, 68.22.5, that down 2.5. May pork bellies, 107.40, the high, 105.55, the low, 105.95, the settlement, that up 132.5. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 32 points at 10,405. The NASDAQ is off 16 at 2004. The S&P 500 6 lower at 1129.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Here's a letter from England. Dr. Science, David Harper and Lynn Stockman from London want to know, Dear Dr. Science, astronomers tell us that they can't find 90% of the matter in the universe. Just where is it?
Most astronomers can't find their car keys or their wallets, much less the missing matter in the universe. They spend most of their time searching for lost pens or pieces of chalk so they can scribble into...